Is that roll call?
Yep.
David Hallman?
Present.
Andy Berg?
Here.
Thank you.
Aaron Decker?
Here.
John Franco?
Here.
John Poole?
Here.
Michael Skalitsky?
Present.
And Boyd Frederick?
Here.
Youth and Governance, Isabella Ricker?
Here.
And Aubriana Madkey?
Here.
Madkey.
Okay. Any citizens' comments? Okay, no citizens. Chairperson comments. Dan will be here in about 5 minutes, so we'll wait on him. Was there any communications at all?
None.
Okay. One other thing I forgot. For some of you who have received information about Bill 777, which would increase the county executive's power, that was pulled as of this morning. So it will not be a part of anything going on this year. Any communications at all?
None.
Okay. Approval of the October 18th
so
minutes.
Second.
Okay.
They were the October 17th minutes. They were wrong on the agenda.
Okay.
Don't have 17th.
Sorry.
That's right. Who approved? And,
pardon?
Decker.
Second.
We'll go out of order. Andy, do you want to do your spiel before Dan gets here?
Sure. I kind of lumped them together.
What are the minutes?
Oh, I'm so sorry. All in favor of the minutes, state by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It's been a long day. Okay, go ahead, Andy.
So I had the opportunity to go to both the Kenosha Achievement Center breakfast and the Chamber of Commerce breakfast. Like I said, I kind of lumped them together here. For those that haven't made it, I implore you to kind of try to go next time. It's a lot of great opportunity to meet a lot of your nonprofits, a lot of your businesses in the community, and hear collectively from all legislators at one time instead of one in a corner. One of the areas that I heard about that they spoke about was Van Wingard. Senator Wingard talked about the savings or the removals of taxes and cuts in taxes. A couple of them was the state property tax. If you look at your property tax bill, there's no state property tax for 2018. With that, it saved my family about $12 this year. So it wasn't very large to begin with. They decreased by about a third the personal property tax, which affects small businesses. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're correct. I just
immensely.
A little.
Part of the takeaway about from that, though, is part of personal property tax goes to education and local governments. So you're going to see that change there, or where they're going to get that money from to keep it steady. They also talked about the dark store, which is obviously not brought to session. And they talked about Senator Wirtz's request for a special session that was voted down partisan-wise. Pleasant Prairie is going to be affected this year in the dark store aspect because they're going to, on average, have about an $800 increase per house. So the decreases in the taxes and all that are really going to kind of be eaten up by the increase of the dark store or the property tax this year. And Summers is going to get hit next year, so it's not going to stop.
You're talking about values of the house?
The
values or the actual
the tax,
taxes?
The property taxes. One thing that I took away from both of them together, the KAC and the Kenosha Chamber of Commerce breakfast, was a lot of money or a lot of funding from the government has been decreased over the years to special education. It used to be between 63% and 68%, and now it's down to, I believe it's 23%, which makes places like KAC and other like-minded organizations to have to revert a lot of their time to doing fundraising and grant writing, which takes, you know, a lot of time away from the clients that they have. So that's about all I got.
Okay.
Supervisor Burke, did they bring up any issues on mental health, or did that get dollars for that or anything?
Anybody else hear anything about dollars on mental health?
They didn't mention dollars. They mentioned they mentioned mental health and how much it had been cut, and that Walker had put some more money into it this session, and that's as far as it went.
They say that they didn't offer up any solutions or what was going on or options or anything like that.
No.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. Dan, if you want to.
Okay. Well, like that. That's
sorry.
No. I'm pleased to be here. So, and I'm going to get. I think you guys are giving me like 5 minutes or so with your county board. So I don't want to. Maybe I take a little more time with you guys, and ultimately, there's probably a lot of issues you have that you'd like to talk about. So I'll go through. Maybe I'll start with transportation. Then we can talk about juvenile corrections, and then maybe the dark stores issue, on the valuation of big box stores, which has been a legislative issue, and then any questions you might have. And what I would say is that I'm extremely interactive, so feel free to jump in anytime. But I'm Dan Barr, Wisconsin Counties Association, a government affairs associate. Primarily, the issues I do handle are transportation, environment, land use, sometimes CVSOs, veterans, county veteran service officers, but the issues overlap, and I try to help my fellow team members. We have 4 members of our government relations team. It's myself, Kyle Christensen, Marcy Rainbolt, Sarah Dietrich Kastorf. Sarah does health and human services. She's been working on the corrective juvenile corrections that I mentioned. And then also Chelsea Fibert, she's the government affairs assistant. And so she is the brains behind the operation, and she makes sure that I don't look foolish. So, and she also helped put together the handout that you're all going to see. So I'll start with that. Any questions so far about WCA, about our function, representing the interest of county government, anything at all? Okay, no problem. Well, let me get started here on what we have done here so far, a little bit about the state budget. I guess essentially we had what I would say are 5 main goals, big picture goals. Local transportation funding, which was sort of my job to work on, child welfare funding, reform of the 911 system, and joint agency statute that we wanted inserted into the budget. So child welfare funding is just that. We want to make sure, as always, we are reimbursed, subsidized, and we don't have any unfunded mandates for the services we provide. Counties are service providers, and we provide services on behalf of your state government to our citizens. And our goal as county government is not to go rob Peter to pay Paul, rather to ensure that us as county can deliver the services that the state mandates. It's up to them what they want to deliver. That's what they're elected for. We're just here to provide the services, and we do that as counties. You all know that. Local transportation funding. We do a lot in transportation. You got the county trunk highway system. You got the state trunk highway system, which we provide all the maintenance for. We got local road aids. Back when you thought of transportation, there's a big transportation debate. How do you fund transportation? How do you fund the segregated transportation fund? And typically, historically, that's been through gas tax and vehicle registration fees. But what's happened is the cost of doing business in terms of transportation has increased. In the past, there's been gas tax indexing. There's been different functions for paying for transportation. But essentially, the gas tax, you know, is stagnant. It's not a growing revenue stream for the transportation fund. So then different legislators, different governors have looked at, in the past 10 years, well, how do we make up the difference between the increasing costs and the flat revenue? Not more people aren't driving. Gas tax is the same. We're getting the same amount of money in, but the costs are increasing. How do we make up the difference? So you either make cuts, either do bonding, which accrues debt service, and long term, that's not going to help you out. or you raise the gas tax or increase your vehicle registration fees. And I think what legislators, with politicians in Madison, when they think about those options, none of them seem very attractive. So not much has happened. But we did get some increases, sort of a two-pronged thing. You think of the big picture, transportation segregated fund, and then you think of our local programs. We were treated very well this past session by the state in terms of a lot of our local programs, which I'll talk about, but in terms of big picture transportation and decreasing that gap between the cost of doing business and what the state's been spending and making up the difference, we really haven't made any progress on that. And so there's been cuts, there's been reductions in projects that are still being planned for, but they go back in the queue. So that's sort of where transportation is now. 911, you may recall back in 2009, the Great Recession was taking place, you may recall. And so there had been a fee, you're charged a fee on your telephone bill for 911 services. That fee then was, because of a shortfall in revenue for the state, was diverted back into the general fund. We've always said, hey, we got to make up, there's a reason for that fee that people pay. Okay, it's to provide the 911 services, and you've redirected that money. People are still paying the fee. It's for 911 services, and the fee is going to the general fund to make up differences in school or other services. So we view that as an inappropriate use of funding, and we should be honest and straightforward in our funding mechanism. So we said, hey, let's move towards the reestablishment of a next generation 911 system with appropriate funding. And we've said, look, we understand if you shift all the money back out of the general fund towards 911 services, you're gonna hurt your bottom line in terms of your general fund. So we're saying don't go for the whole thing all at once. Just take baby steps. Take a piece of it. And for the first time since 2009, we were successful this session in getting a portion of that done. And so that's good news. And then finally, the fifth pillar, the big fifth priority that we were able to achieve was the joint agency statute. And so what happens is when you guys provide services, let's say, for instance, you hire a highway commissioner, and let's say for whatever reason your county says, hey, we have a really excellent highway commissioner, but we have a similar road system, we have similar functions as the Racine County Highway Department, so we're going to share a highway commissioner. This joint agency statute change would allow your county to form a joint highway committee, because right now all the committees, they're statutorily mandated. You got to have a public works committee or transportation, and it's for your county. This gives you flexibility if you so choose. It's not mandatory. You don't have to, but it's an opportunity for you as a county to potentially partner with other counties in terms of the services you provide and provide more efficiency and a bigger bang for the buck for the taxpayer. And that joint agency statute allows you to share committees, share employees. That's why it's called a joint agency statute. And so that's the background on the big five priorities. My expertise is transportation, environment, and land use. But I did a little bit with Sarah and Kyle and some of the other lobbyists. I said, just give me an update on some of your stuff, because I'm going to try and present on everything. And then, of course, we'll talk about juvenile corrections in a little bit. But any questions so far? Anything pique your interest so far?
On the joint agency, is it limited to just roads?
Or no.
Law enforcement, it could be human services?
Yeah, anything. Human services would be a big one. Yeah, you can...
And obviously, you've heard from other counties, right?
Because you bet.
Your attention. You bet. Are any of them in a position to act on that?
So, for example, and I'd say the impetus for this came from roads, came from transportation. Clark and Jackson County. Clark is Neillsville, Jackson, the county seat of Black River Falls. There was a gentleman named Randy Anderson. He was a longtime highway commissioner that both those counties shared. And they had separate highway commissioners. And a lot of times, because he had separate highway committees. And so they'd give direction to the highway commissioner, okay? But sometimes the priorities conflicted. So if you're all meeting as one highway committee for both counties, and you think of it as one road system, one person, it goes much smoother. And so that was the concept behind this. And really, it's just a tool in your toolbox in terms of generating efficiencies, trying to stretch the tax dollars you get further so you can hold down taxes at the local level. That's the goal. And it's optional. If you don't feel it's to your county's benefit, don't have to do it. It's up to you. You can organize how we're trying to give you as many tools as you possibly can get to organize how you'd like. And so that's the goal from the government affairs team there.
It's very new, so obviously
it's brand new.
Don't have much.
You may come up with some creative.
In any cases, I just have a tendency of believing each county's administration is going to want to maintain control of what they currently have, as opposed to looking at ways to work together with a sister county or a county next door, with the exception up north where it's a lot more rural. But you, other than the one you pointed to, really don't have anything as of yet. How do you, or have you, as the county association, come up with any type of a, I don't call it a strategy, but an approach to get a conversation going in a particular area with regards to roads, law enforcement, human services, things of that nature?
Well, I think in terms of transportation, I can tell you, because it's my area, I think Jackson and Clark have the model. Now, in terms of health and human services, there's a lot of services county to county that mirror each other in northern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin. Now, you guys are unique. You're a big county. You're a bigger county. I'd say a lot of the service sharing you might do, I'd say maybe with, I don't want to say that you'd never do it with another county, but you guys have a lot of similarities to Racine, so it makes sense. And I think it's just communication, finding out ways you do things, what are the best practices, and applying it across the board in a particular service area. I think that's the key thing. But I think communication between counties is the same. Counties that work well together, they tend to do this. They tend to want to share services. Counties that don't like each other, they don't have leaders that don't get along, I mean, they're not going to share services. So, but sure, WCA, I think what we do is we have educational workshops, and we do a lot of stuff, a lot of land use stuff, in my case, particularly in northern Wisconsin, on mining, things like that. But we do have different workshops. This would be a county org related issue. And what we're working on as we get done here with the legislative session is trying to educate our members on the best practices, what other counties are doing, that might be an option for you. And so, but it's up to you guys. You guys are elected officials. I don't want to tell you this is an option for you. I'm not going to tell you to do it. We'll give you examples, and ultimately,
so right now you guys are planning as an association to put together examples of, it's new.
Yeah.
Examples are,
but here are some examples. Yeah.
To getting either a conversation or something started, as opposed to trying to drive it organically.
Right.
Within.
Well, I think we want to get the conversation going. I think we typically have workshops up in Stevens Point. In the case of the mining, we did it up in Minocqua. But I think for you guys, you know, down here, there's definitely opportunities to reduce costs, share services, and be more efficient.
Have there been any examples from law enforcement? Because obviously each county has a sheriff elected official, right?
Yes, so those are constitutional. So with the constitutional officers, it's going to be tough.
Okay.
Not that the sheriffs can't work together.
Sure.
And I'll just say that. You know, each county has the sheriff. And so I'll tell you another example in terms of law enforcement, though. Buffalo and Pepin County share a district attorney. They share a district attorney. Okay. Thomas Clark is his name. So he, you know, those are, I think Buffalo County has 14,000 people. Pepin has 7. So Pepin's the smallest county in the state. So there's an example of where they have different, they got their own constitutional officers, your clerk of courts, but the DA, they do share one.
Thank you.
So,
Supervisor Gantz.
Yeah, we already do some consortiums with Racine in regard to human services. A couple years back, we did have a vote on that. So we try to do that. And one of the things that Kenosha County is on the leading edge of, and that's 911 services. With our joint services, we partnered with the city of Kenosha and some municipalities. So I think that's another place to grow and to look at. We also are back up with Racine, and we exchange ideas, and if it's down or you have some problems. So I think there is some of that going on. I happen to agree with Supervisor Skolitsky. There's not a lot that counties are going to want to relinquish, but there are some things that do overlap. And,
so we
have, since 1982, we've had what's called joint services. So we partner with the city of Kenosha, and we have one. So that saves our taxpayers from doubling up and paying for two separate dispatch centers, along
it's
with
a PSAP,
other
PSAP, right? You guys have your own PSAP you share with the city? Is that right?
Our own what?
So the dispatch center.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
So, and we have a couple of the municipalities that are involved as well, too. So,
okay.
And our sheriff is partnering with other municipalities to provide some, you know, some overwatch on their areas and charging back. And so there is some work in that area. So, I mean, we are doing a little bit of that now. I don't know what this would open up, but we are doing, I said, a little bit.
This is a great example right there. So the PSAP is the dispatch, 911 dispatch center. It's called it PSAP. And it's an acronym, and I don't know, I don't typically deal with that issue, but I know it's a PSAP. And so Marcy, who handles this, she was asked by one of the legislators, how many PSAPs are there in the state? And we've been researching and researching and researching because we don't know. It's unclear. This is an area where consolidation could be really effective, really effective. You know, you put everyone under one roof, maybe you have a county dispatch center, find out what the need is, you know. Obviously, it's going to be streamlined, you're going to save money, everyone saves money, everybody wins. Health and Human Services is going to be a hot area. Transportation is going to be a hot area. You're all doing the same activities. These are the same things. When you get with departments that have constitutional officers, there are still things that can be done in terms of law enforcement, in terms of patrols, things like that. But ultimately, the services that you provide for Health and Human Services is going to be a hot area, and I think 911. I'm certain 911.
I have another thing for you, and that's something that I just asked the committee or Supervisor Berg about a minute ago, and that's mental health issues. And I mean, I think there could be consortiums created for regional mental health, facilities and other things, group psychiatrists or whatever. And is WCA or the state looking at any of that? Because that's something we're going to spend more and more money on as time goes by. I mean, that's not something that you go patch it like a road and it goes away.
No, and we'll talk about juvenile corrections, but I absolutely, I mean, these are services that are not unique to any particular county. We all have the same needs. You consolidate your services, you're bound to save money, and definitely these are areas, you know, a lot of counties already do different things in terms of mental health services, Health and Human Services. Not my expertise, but certainly I know they are, and we're going to have educational seminars and opportunities to learn more about what different counties are doing. And I wish Sarah was here on the mental health stuff, because she's got some good suggestions on some things that are being done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Supervisor Gantz is correct. The income maintenance consortium, but that was forced on us by the state.
Right.
That was not a decision that was made by the counties. The state basically looked at all the counties and said, this is how you're going to be grouped. And then the counties scrambled to meet the requirements that the state basically said that we had to meet. We voluntarily partnered with Racine. It was their judges, their clerk of courts, our judges, and our clerk of courts. We did the foreclosure mediation program, which worked out really well. It was quite nice. On the issue of transportation, I recently acquired a car.
You have a car?
I have.
Okay.
Bad news, though. There's no money to gas it. There's no money to transfer the title and do all the other stuff,
God,
to make it drivable. And so I'm curious about the conversation around transportation in the state as to whether or not it's advanced. And I say that because we've lucked out here in Kenosha. We don't pay Metra anything. They didn't want to turn the train around in Winthrop Harbor, so we already had the infrastructure here where we were, I guess, in the 20s and 1920s and years prior, unloading vegetables from rail cars. So they just came up here, flipped the train, and ran it back. But then we have no say in the schedule. I know part of the KRM conversation, there was a lot of concern about what would happen being grouped with Milwaukee and the fear of dollars being sucked in that direction. So I've heard that, too. But I'll be honest, I'm really concerned because internally we seem to have there's an Eastern Transit system for Kenosha and a Western Transit system for Kenosha. And if I read correctly in the Milwaukee Business Journal yesterday, Racine has apparently something similar where they have an Eastern transportation system and a Western transportation system. And that doesn't work very well. I was looking at some of the suggestions about getting people to Foxconn, and I'm like, so you would take one bus from Kenosha to get to Racine, another bus to Racine to get out west, and then you would need something else to actually get you to the site. That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah.
We've really got to do something to unify this. Have people started to understand the wisdom of that, or are we still stuck in the old-fashioned thinking where we don't want this, we don't want to pay for this, but we still think it's a problem?
Well, all the above. I think with the Foxconn, now here's a perfect example of where you would want to collaborate with Racine Coney. And you know, I just talked to your county executive. You've got a great relationship with Jonathan Delagrave, and you're both counties are going to have employees who work at Foxconn that live in Kenosha and that live in Racine. And I tell you, if you have to take a bus into Racine County to access your workplace, and you have two systems, you know, and all of a sudden you get the county KR, it's county KR, I passed it when I came down, all of a sudden I got to get off one and get on the next system, and you know, it's not real efficient. So those are things to think about. Now, we're very early in the planning process. This has just come out, and certainly at the local level, you're going to, you know, you're having a whole change in the, they're going to rework the whole highway out there too, which is good. I mean, it's overdue, right? So that's good news. And you're going to have changes then to your local roads once that takes place, because construction facilitates construction. So as those things happen, as you try to get people from point A to point B, get people to work, there's going to be opportunities definitely to use this joint statute to consolidate transportation services. I think, I don't know what your bus system situation is in this county or in Racine, but I'm sure the city at least has one. But those regional transportation is something to think about as you go forward in partnering with your partners in Racine County.
I hate mentioning Foxconn, because even if there was no Foxconn, if it did not exist, this would still be a problem. I mean, I've been to our folks in planning and development and land information, and seeing the density projections, population projections for who's going to grow where in terms of municipalities in Kenosha County. If there was no Foxconn, it's still a very, very massive problem. And I know that on our county board, you know, other supervisors from the West End over the years have been agreeable to buses, but I'll be honest, buses are really a poor person's transportation. That is the transportation of paupers. That is principally who rides them, with the exception of urban areas with very high density, where then you have people who might be middle class, upper middle class. You know, that you don't really get middle class, upper middle class folks unless you start doing, as you know, like light rail, commuter rail, things of that nature, which people still hate. But then I go back to this question of like, so we don't necessarily like poverty, but we're okay with that, but we don't want the transportation system that would get folks. You see what I'm saying here?
So I guess, I don't know, I don't know if there's a question or not.
I don't really know, but if you can find one, please answer.
So I will say this in terms of transit. In general, one of the priorities we've been somewhat successful is trying to ensure we get the funding we need in terms of mass transit operating aids that funds a lot of your transit systems locally. It's in the transportation fund. There's some debate about that because it's part of the gas tax, vehicle registration fees. Some would like to see it in the general fund as well. It's a good debate to have, but not one that I'm going to have. But nonetheless, I do think that transit's a priority for counties. We have counties that have bus systems and various, even in rural counties, you do have Meals on Wheels, you do have rideshare programs, people who have DUIs. I just had one legislature from a gentleman named Adam Jarko who contacted me about Polk County's rideshare. And he wants to try and ensure that, you know, he's got people in his county who need to have access to the workplace. And the county is very spread out, a lot of little small towns, big geographic size. He says, you know, obviously we can't have a bus system here, but you know, having a ride share, you know, where someone could pay a few bucks to get from Balsam Lake up to Frederick or wherever, that makes sense. And so there are different forms of mass transit that different counties are using. It's not just buses and trains, there's ride shares, there's all sorts of stuff. So you know, lots to think about in terms of mass transit and how people get from point A to point B and to travel cheaper, and how to do it the cheapest you can. Again, the whole goal you're going to look for is representatives, as county board supervisors, is to always try and get the best bang for your buck for your constituents. And so,
what do the regional planners have to say about this? I mean, these are the folks that have the real bird's eye view in terms of who's moving where and what area is going to grow. I would think they would principally be the leaders on this kind of conversation, especially because, as I understand it, Wisconsin has one of the most intricate road systems in the nation because it was designed to get milk to every corner of the state.
Well,
a friend of mine who just loves doing research on the state, he uncovered that and shared that with me.
Sure. No, it's true. And a lot of what we do is based on agriculture. Now, agriculture's changed. Still do a lot of agriculture, but it's just different than it was back in the day. But we got, counties got pretty massive county trunk highway systems. A lot of our county trunk roads, you know, initially were very rural and were used for agriculture. Now they're through, like County KR is almost like a highway. It's like Highway 50, you know. I mean, it's a major road system. You know, you share the jurisdiction of that with Racine County. Those are like highways in a lot of places. And so the need is there. You know, I think your regional transit people, I think they're focused on multimodal transportation, different modes, what's cheapest, what's convenient, and how do we get people to work, how do we get people to market, and how do we do it without burdening the taxpayer? It's one thing I hear. What are the opportunities? What are employers doing? And, you know, what's Fox? I'm sure Foxconn for their employees may have, you know, the different companies have different transportation opportunities as well. It's not all government. So one of the things I've seen, you know, from the regional transit folks is partnering with the private sector to get employees from highly populated places to the workplace, and doing it through with private sector money or partnering with local governments as well, which we oftentimes see and is an efficient way to move forward. And so there's a lot of creativity out there. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, with all these self-driving cars, you know, starting to come into their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, there might be self-driving buses here pretty soon. I mean, was any of the legislation directed towards any of that?
So autonomous vehicles. So I gave a presentation, and I studied up for it to find out what's going on with autonomous vehicles. And what I found out, and what you'll find out, is autonomous vehicles aren't a reality right now, but 25 years from now they're going to be. So we should prepare for that, you know. And when you talk about autonomous vehicles, that's, you know, there's a computer system in the vehicle that gets you from point A to point B. You don't have to worry about driving. You know, we're going to reduce, it's going to be a good thing for society. We're going to reduce our drunken driving. We're going to reduce accidents. A lot of good things that can happen. And I don't know that we need to prepare for it right now. It's not happening now. The technology is being developed. But I'd be mindful of it. And that's why in talking with experts in the transportation field, I said, well, how can counties prepare for autonomous vehicles? There's no way to really prepare, you know, we haven't done it yet, but be mindful it's coming, is what I was told. So I guess that's the answer to your question.
Okay, thank you.
On that question, how practical is that in our climate? I mean, we have things like black ice, we have all kinds of stuff that they do not have in California, in Silicon Valley, where they like to build little things and test them and then roll them out to the rest of us as perfection. I mean, how practical is an autonomous vehicle in this climate, honestly, from the research that you've done?
Well, I think it's good. I like the idea of autonomous vehicles. You know, people, when they drive, they get themselves into trouble for whatever reason, whether it's their inattentiveness, drunken driving. They're just bad drivers in general. Or just some people, I see them, I'm like, I don't want you behind the wheel. You know, so it's a good thing. Now, but as technology develops, you know, we solve problems with technology. You know, these computer systems are made to detect things. Hopefully they can detect the black ice, so they can detect potential hazards, extreme weather conditions, stuff like that. So I think it can be done here just like it could be in California or anywhere else. Okay.
If you want to go.
Okay, well, we'll keep going. In our Cap Watch this week, and I don't know, raise your hand if you had a chance to read the Cap Watch, because we had a whole update on the Lincoln Hill situation. Did you read it? You read it? You did? Okay, so then you guys know what's going on. Terrific.
Yes.
But you just see the county attorney?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you just saying I have free time and I can read it then?
So I'm going to tell you, so Sarah from our office has been in discussions with Robin Voss, and with Evan Goyke. Evan's a state representative from Milwaukee area. Evan's working on the issue, because I'd say half of the cases in juvenile corrections, about 50% are from Milwaukee County. And so Evan's heavily involved. And I think we're going to get to a place here on the reform of this whole system in the Lincoln Hills up in Lincoln County, where it's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be a better situation for the state, because Lincoln Hills is going to close. And I think what you're seeing from a political standpoint is the governor and the legislators and people in both parties don't feel it's feasible to continue with Lincoln Hills. They think it's also like Alcatraz, you know, I mean, what do you do with Alcatraz? It's got a bad reputation, there's a stigma, there's bad things happening, and so we got to go in a different direction. That's what the state's looking to do. And so essentially, WCA, we had three big picture criteria that we developed that we've always thought about juvenile corrections in terms of delivering the services. We deliver services that we presented. Then there were 10 major points. I won't get into all 10 because there's a lot. But the big picture items are for the juveniles. And it's not all just about the county. We want to provide the services. But we also want to see some progress with these individuals. We want to see them get out of juvenile corrections. We want to see them go back into society. We want to see them be taxpayers and productive citizens and things like that. And so how do you help these individuals become productive citizens? Well, first thing is they got to have some access to their support system. Now, if you're from Milwaukee and you're up in Lincoln County, it's difficult, but that's one of our three criteria. The other thing is unfunded mandates for the counties. Counties got to provide the service. State mandates it. You know, we want to make sure we have adequate funds. Of course, the county, anytime you provide a service, the world's not perfect. It's going to cost us money. It always has, always will. It's going to continue to. It's not a perfect system. You know, we're service providers. We serve our citizens. You guys are elected officials trying to make things better for your constituents. And so I can't tell you that the new system is going to be perfect because it's not. But I can tell you, based on the research that's been done, based on the condition of Lincoln Hills, based on the current system, it's going to be a lot better. It's going to be an improvement, not perfect, but better. And so are we able to serve the individuals and the unfunded mandates and the access to the support system? Those are the three big criteria. Ultimately, what I said, support system, unfunded mandates, and like I said, the third thing is ultimately, are we on a track to make sure we can best rehabilitate, serve these individuals, and get them to become productive citizens? Those are our three big picture criteria that we've discussed with the legislative leadership, with the governor, Republicans, Democrats. I think that this is going to be pretty remarkable when you see this vote happen. It's going to happen tomorrow, okay? And there is a package that we've agreed to. And you'll hear more of the details as they come out. It was just released this afternoon. I haven't seen it or heard the details. I just know that you have to trust in my colleague Sarah that she's been working on it. She knows the issue inside and out. And she's representing the county's interest in making sure that we're going to get the very best deal we can, certainly better than what's happening now. But, you know, I think ultimately, big picture, we're going to be in a better place under the new system. I think we're shooting for a 2020 shutdown of Lincoln Hills, and what looks like what's going to happen is the regionalization, and we just talked about sharing of services, providing services for these individuals. Racine County, I know Racine County's got a facility, you know, talk to your county executive, he says, well, that makes sense for us to work with Racine County. Milwaukee County's big enough to probably have their own. In the northern part of the state, now then there are other facilities out there, you know, Racine's got one, I know La Crosse and Eau Claire have one, they'll probably serve lots of the counties in the western part of the state, Eau Claire, Northwest, and you may have some regions in the north that counties get together and provide these services. But what I would encourage you to do, and I can forward it on to you, is we'll get you the cap watch and we'll provide additional information to your county, share with the board chair and the executive's office so you have the latest on what's going on with Lincoln Hills. But regionalization is going to be the direction the state goes. And I think ultimately the goal with this Copper Lake school, which is the women's school, Lincoln Hills is the boys, we're moving away from that, away from a statewide provider to a regionalization with all the same reimbursements the counties get for individuals. And so that's the direction things are going right now.
But it probably will, from what I've read, cost us more dollars in the long run to going with the regionals.
I don't think it's going to be free. I mean, anytime you have something new like this, you got infrastructure, you'll get reimbursed for some of that, but, you know, it ain't going to be free. Yes, I would agree to that. Now, the benefits to society, the benefits to your county, it's going to be good long-term benefits of having people in a better system rehabilitated. There's long-term societal benefits that they're hard to quantify. So, is it going to cost you money? Absolutely. Is it going to be perfect? No. Are you going to like every bit of it? No. But is it going to be better than the current system? I mean, like lots, there are a lot of options better than the current system.
How many kids are
in? I'm not liking much of what you just said. So, you know, so how long did we know this was shutting down, and why didn't we have something in place? I mean, you know, the brick and mortar and what you do is a huge part of where this is, you know, where the expenses are going to come from.
Sure.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you could just say the state's going to regionalization and you guys figure it out yourself. That is that a solution?
I mean, and really? I would say, I mean, now keep in mind now, what I would say is reserve your judgment until you see the details. I don't even have the details because it's being hammered out like today as we speak. You know, we're agreeing on the details. Your government affairs team is there saying, look, you know, we need to be reimbursed. We're having construction costs. So the state's going to assist us with cost, but I can't sit here and tell you it's not going to cost you more money. I don't think that's realistic. And I just don't have the details to share. All I can tell you is sort of a big picture view, and this just came to a head because of the number of incidences, whether it be fights, sexual assaults, employees, and bad things happening at Lincoln Hills. Bad things happening at Lincoln Hills that the state has gotten to the point that says we got to go in a different direction. So change is not easy. Understand, I wouldn't say don't like it. Get a look at the details first. Read it over, absorb it. Do the research, then make up your mind.
That's all well and good, but for me, when you create another situation, you should have somewhat, you know, of a solution in place, and it appears we don't.
Right. No,
we don't have it. And I would say that I brought up mental health earlier, and trying to rehabilitate and get people, you know, youngsters back into society. Well, try not to wait till they're 17 and in a correctional facility. Maybe you got to look at some mental health prior to that.
Right.
You know, and that's part of a big picture, and it's all costly. But, you know, just to close and say, oh, you know, look big picture. You know, we're going to get hit in the short picture. Now, I'm not saying Lincoln Hills is something that we want to keep open or do, but we should have a solution in place, and we don't.
So what I would say is that this is a rapid developing situation. The state, I think, has decided here in the past 10 days or so. If you asked me 10 days ago, I said, there's no way this change is going to happen. But legislative leadership and the governor have said that this is the direction we need to go. Lincoln Hills needs to be shut down. County's come to the table, and there's been direct conversations about how best we can do this. They're shutting it down. And frankly, you know, we can tell, oh, no, we're not going to do it. Fine, but we're going to shut it down. You're going to provide the service. We're the lawmakers, and so you can like it or you can work with us or you cannot be part of the conversation. So that's just where we're at right now. I mean, the state is doing it. They're shutting it down. We're going to continue to provide the service, and they're going to mandate that we do it. And so our job then is to, it may not be an ideal situation, understand the concerns. Our goal is to maximize, make the best out of the current circumstances that we can. As in terms of anything, we want to do the very best we can. And I there's no easy answer, but I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it is what it is.
How many?
Supervisor Berger. Supervisor Tucker.
Okay, go ahead.
I had asked the sheriff back in November how many juveniles we had in.
Yes, that, yeah.
And at the time, we had 3.
Where?
And 2 boys and 1 girl. Two boys at Lincoln Hill and 1 female at Copper Lake. And I've got the response from Mr. Rogers, Ron Rogers. If you want me to read it, I can. But we really try to limit who we send and try to do our own diversionary, do our own programming and stuff like that. I don't know what the history was. You know, 2 years ago, how many did we have? How many children do we have there? I don't know. Maybe we made that decision to act at that point. I'm really afraid of what the DOC is already the largest budget in the state and increases every year, and you're going to build 4 brand new places, 3 at the minimum. That's going to drastically increase the budget because you also have to staff it, not like a prison, but because you have a lot of stuff that you have to add to children that you don't have to have for adults. I don't know, maybe what we're doing in Kenosha needs to be shared with other counties so that we can cut that down. But we got an email, I work for the DOC, and we got an email, I don't know, a month and a half ago. It's happening.
Yep.
So, I mean, our secretary already knew it was going to be coming. If he's not going to put that, I guess he could, but...
Yeah. So I think there was, initially what happened was there was a push from the governor. You've had a series of problems, reports released, instances at Lincoln Hills. And so I think the governor, this is the direction he's wanted to go. Then, as I'd say, like I say, 10 days ago, I just said, I don't know if the legislature is going to make it. They're going to agree to anything. But I think at this point, I think things have just kind of come together here at the end of session. It's something that's being put together very quickly. Ultimately, you know, I think really what they've decided is we're either going to act now or maybe nothing will ever happen, and they're ready to be done with Lincoln Hills. And so that's just the direction that the governor and the legislature have chosen to go. And like I said, we're doing our very best on your behalf to represent the counties and make the very best of the decisions they're making on your behalf. And that's really all we can do. I mean,
I misunderstood when I was listening to the speaker on the radio today, but I thought he was talking about a two-tiered approach where we have like what Racine has across in different counties.
Correct, that's right.
And then also not a Lincoln Hills, but a place where the more serious offenders go. Is that correct?
Correct, that is right. That's okay. Right. Yep. Yeah, that's right.
So we're not going to be, it's not that the county's going to be taking care of the serious offenders.
So, yeah, so in the cab watch, so it's in short, I'm just going to read the details here. Again, I'm just coming up to educating myself on this. When the bill would require the Department of DOC to maintain a supervision over juveniles in the serious juvenile offender program under community supervision and under original adult jurisdiction. A and B felonies, the state will pay 95% of the reimbursement to the county in those cases. So the very serious, you know, that's the first tier, okay? And, you know, I think what I'll do is for all of you to provide you with some additional details, because again, not my area of expertise, just I don't typically work on this, but I know you'd be interested. I'm going to pass along some of the details, and we'll have more as this comes to fruition in the next 24, 48 hours.
You specified crimes, right?
What's that?
Very serious crimes?
Very serious. So A or B felonies, state will pay. That's right. That's right.
How many residents, juvenile residents, are in Lincoln Hills?
Well, I have no idea. I can't tell you off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that. I
was curious.
Yeah. I think the other big push that I was aware of is they want to look more towards trying to get kids a little bit more localized reform in that, not just shipping, and there's a wide range of juvenile offenders, right? Some really hard, and others perhaps could be a more localized and get them some
diversion programs.
Yeah, the regional ones, but try to get them some job training and, you know, get them back on the right track before they become hardened criminals. That's one of the approaches that at least sounded, yeah, well, you're going to pay one way or another. But if you can get somebody when they're young turned around,
mm-hmm.
You're going to pay for that person for the next 40 years.
Sure.
And sometimes in these larger facilities, that doesn't necessarily happen. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Well, I think Lincoln Hills.
Or, you know, Racine, yeah. Maybe it's, and I don't even know, Kenosha, Racine, Walworth, let's just say that little group together works on the group of juveniles. Perhaps the Racine facility is full, perhaps it isn't. You know, I think that's kind of the concept that is there. Yeah, you're all right. Details are not necessarily there, but there's some merit to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this, so you talked about getting people on the right track. We talked about our three main goals I discussed with Sarah. One is the access to the support system. You send someone to Lincoln Hills, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know
when
that's sending them to a good place.
Yeah.
You know, Lincoln Hills has sort of devolved into a place that you wouldn't, if you're looking to reform someone, you know, you want them back on the track, you want them to be a productive member of society, maybe Lincoln Hills isn't where you'd want to send them. And thus, I think the state, the legislatures, the Department of Corrections, other leaders, the governor's office, has debated whether or not Lincoln Hills is serving its purpose in terms of rehabilitation. And clearly, they've decided we got to go another direction. Situations devolved. Lincoln Hills has had problems. Because ultimately, as you said, your long-term goal in terms of saving money is to get these individuals to become productive citizens. And so this is the reason for the reform. This is the reason why we're changing. Change is not easy. Change ain't easy. It's just not. And that's why there's going to be some heartburn as we move forward, there's no question. Our goal is to minimize that heartburn. Our goal is to, as we work with the state, work with our legislative leaders, we have to say, hey guys, there's gonna be infrastructure costs, there's gonna be developing new programs. And I can't stand here and tell you, oh, don't worry, the state's got us covered. It's like building a new house or moving. You know how when you move, you always lose something? It's the same when you start a new program or build a new facility. There are gonna be costs that you didn't plan for. There's gonna be situations that you didn't account for. And that's gonna be the case with this, I suspect. And so I think as service providers, as planners, as we go forward, representing you, we're going to try and minimize the heartburn. But I can't honestly stand here and tell you it's not going to cost you any more money or it's going to be wonderful for your budgets or anything like that. But I think in terms of the policy, in terms of juvenile corrections going from Lincoln Hills to the system they're talking about, based on, again, not my area of expertise, I don't typically lobby on this issue, but in being a party to some of the discussions and hearing from my colleagues, talking to experts, I think we're definitely going in a better direction for our kids, for our society, for our counties, for our municipalities. And for long term, you think about the cost. You send someone to Lincoln Hills, do they come back rehabilitated? Are they back committing crimes? Are they productive members? Do they pay taxes? Hopefully some of them do, I don't know. But ultimately, we want to maximize the chance that they are rehabilitated, they are productive members of society. That will reduce our costs long term. And you may not see that, you know, it's hard to quantify that, but ultimately, that's the goal.
There was a lot of things done with opioids in this last session, this coming session.
Sure. So if you go into the packet, you know, I'll go into the packet here on, oh, and you've heard of the HOPE agenda, and boy, in rural Wisconsin, opioids has been a major, major problem. So Representative John Nygren, and he's from Marinette County. He's also chair of the Joint Finance Committee. He has a daughter who suffered from opioid addiction. And he has, let me just go here to some of these.
I think the proper word is suffers.
What's that?
I think the proper word is suffers.
Suffers, right. So there's a couple executive orders that were issued, which you can read about here in the hand. Does everyone have one of these handouts?
It was emailed to them.
Okay, great. Okay, so essentially, so there's opioid legislation, Senate Bill 768, which all this stuff is going to pass. This is a priority. It's bipartisan. There's lots of support for fixing our addiction problems. And it's prevalent in rural Wisconsin, but problems everywhere. And it's a pretty comprehensive package. And I give credit to John Nygren because it's very near and dear to him. He's studied up on it. And some of the things they're trying to do, medically assisted treatment pilot program, law enforcement drug trafficking grants, regional drug prosecutors, family drug courts, impact panels for victims, evidence-based program funding. So this is Senate Bill 768, the Assembly Bill. There's always two bill numbers. You have one Assembly Bill, one Senate Bill. The Assembly Bill's 906. Okay, and then there's a separate bill, the health care and workforce package, and I think the first bill relates to prevention. The second bill, this is county worker training tools, substance abuse counselor barriers, medical health nurses, continuing education, public school health curriculum. This is SB 767, AB 907, and so those are the two main bills that the legislature is focused on to try to give us the tools, provide dollars and training, and I think the biggest goal is prevention in terms of what they've talked about, but those are some of the things being done by the legislature.
Do these only target opioids? Because I know that methamphetamines are a big problem.
Yeah, meth. I mean, the focus here, when you look at some of the things they're doing, public school health curriculums, prevention, continuing education, worker training tools, they're applicable to meth or anything else. And I think,
like the drug courts and things like that, is that only for opioids or is it all drug addictions?
You know, I believe it'd be for anything, but targeted towards opioids, yes. So, what else should I talk about?
What's this buprenorphine? Is that naloxone? Is that the medical name for it or what?
I think when you're addicted to one of these particular drugs, it's something that they give you to ease the, you know, even so.
The craving.
The withdrawal symptoms.
Withdrawal symptoms. Yeah. So I guess it's sort of like if I were to quit smoking, I'd maybe take Nicorette, you know. That's sort of what this is and what they're trying to provide to individuals who are stopped, you know, being forced off. So, any other, what time does your county board meeting start?
7:30.
Oh, we got some time then. Okay, yeah. Good. Okay, well, we can keep going.
However, we do need a few minutes to get up there.
Okay. So, one other thing I wanted to talk about, and you may have heard about this, is it's a big piece of legislation and been debated, is the dark stores legislation. Yes. Raise your hand if you've heard about the dark stores. how can I best explain this? So, I'll use Walgreens as an example. I shop at Walgreens, and I like Walgreens. I'm not going to say anything bad about any particular entity. Walmart, Shopko, Target, they're all out there. Big box stores and Walgreens. So, essentially, they get a, like you do with your homes or property that you own, you get a tax assessment on it. And I guess what's happened, let's say Walgreens, we'll use them, or the drugstore, what they'll do is they'll get their tax assessment, and let's say the tax assessment says, the assessor says your building's worth $3 million. So this year you're paying taxes on $3 million. They'll say, well, yeah, you know, $3 million. You know, yeah, that's what you say it's worth, but really, because of the specialized sort of operation we have, there's no one else who's going to buy this for $3 million. As a matter of fact, the most I could ever get for this building, for this drugstore, is $2 million. And so what they do is they file a lawsuit in court, and they say, hey, really, because even though they value us at $3 million, it's really only worth $2 million, because that's all we could ever sell it for. And they, you know, come in with their own experts, and generally they've been very successful in court in getting their assessment, the valuation of the property, reduced by the courts. There's even been examples where local governments are sending money back and checks to some of these entities that you see in your packet there. Lowe's, Menards, Walmart, Walgreens, you know, they're all wonderful companies. But from our standpoint, what happens is when those companies get these reductions, the cost is passed down to small business owners, to people who don't have large groups of attorneys, homeowners, people on fixed incomes, things like that. And they have a great deal of effects on your budgets here in Kenosha County and elsewhere. So we've suggested, and I want to credit Senator Dewey Strobel, Representative Rob Brooks. Dewey is one of the most conservative senators in the state Senate. And Rob Brooks is one of the most conservative senators. He's from the Wau counties, from Washington and Ozaukee County. Both of them are. And they've introduced legislation to say, no, you know, no more of this. You see, just like anyone else, you get your valuation, you get your assessment, you got to pay it. Enough. And we're not going to, you're not going to shoulder these costs onto other individuals. And so this has been a priority for us, for the League of Municipalities and others. Bipartisan support, if it were to come to a vote in the state Senate, I think it'd pass. There'd maybe be three no votes at most out of 33 senators. There's two vacant seats right now. Well, there's one vacant seat. But there's a lot of support on both sides of the aisle, which is great. The issue is, though, and we have right now 15, there's 18 Republican senators. I'd say we got 15 votes. We had 16, and the Senate Majority Leader has a rule, which he has a rule for every bill, that you need 17 Republican votes, which is the threshold to pass any bill. 17 Republican votes. They have 18 senators. 17 Republican votes to pass any particular bill. And right now, I think we got Senator Craig and Senator Kapinga who are opposed. And we have Senator Darling, who has been a champion on a lot of our issues. She's been great for county government, but she has Kohl's in her district, the Kohl's corporate headquarters in Menominee Falls, which is part of her Senate district. And so she's concerned about the impact on them, and thus is not to a point where she's yes. But we thought we could get her. And we had Senator Harsdorf, who ended up being appointed agriculture secretary. And then her replacement was going to be Adam Jarko, a gentleman from Balsam Lake, Wisconsin, rural Wisconsin, and he supported the dark stores too, but then he lost, and it became a Democratic seat. And so the rule is you need 17 Republican senators per the majority leader, so we didn't get that, and thus the bill's not being taken up. And even though in both houses there's plenty, if you just had a vote, yes, there may only be 15 Republican votes, but there's right now there's 14 Democratic senators. They'd all vote for it. I think all of them would, close to all. And in the Assembly also, Republicans have 64 members. Vast majority of Republicans support the bill, but the Assembly won't take it up unless the Senate does. Obviously, they don't want to vote on something when there's political criticism. A major opponent of the bill is a group known as Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, very much opposed to the bill. What I'd say about Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, we've been partners with them in the past. They certainly represent a broad spectrum of businesses and groups, but they do represent more than just big box stores. There are small businesses that are going to be hurt from this decision of theirs to really go all in opposition to the dark stores legislation. A lot of their own members should let them know that. You know, if you're a small business owner, you have a little hardware store, maybe you don't have a team of lawyers to contest your valuation of your property, but this could hurt you. And if you're a member of your local chamber of commerce, it should be an issue for you. So that's what's going on with the dark stores legislation. And we think it's a good way for us to keep property taxes down for all of our citizens, even for those that don't have the legal representation to contest their valuation.
How soon do you foresee a resolution to
the dark stores issues?
Yeah.
Well, I think what's going to happen is the Assembly is going to adjourn for this session, and they're not going to pass the bill. So obviously then I think what's going to happen is the Senate has one more meeting planned for March, but obviously it's not passed either house, so it's going to be dead. It pretty much is dead right now. What's going to happen after the session ends is the legislature is going to go back home. They're going to start campaigning for re-election, and then we'll have elections, and we'll see what the composition of the legislature is when they come back. Regardless of that, I would say it'll be a big issue for us and for local government as we go forward, for small businesses, for individuals, property owners, and so it's going to be an issue, but I don't foresee a resolution in the near term, but I think eventually something will be done.
Okay.
It's a big enough issue, and there's it's an 80% issue. I mean, say if you did a poll, WMC is just fighting a losing battle long term. That the public just does not agree with them on this at all.
I didn't realize we had the Hestert rule on steroids in the state Senate.
What's that?
Yeah, I didn't realize we had the Hestert rule on steroids in the Senate.
Oh, the 17? Well,
you need 16 out of 17, you said?
You need, so they, I should say this. When the session started, Republicans had 20 members. They had a great 2016 election, and so it was a 20 to 13 majority, 33 members total in the Senate. And so what happened was, then you had Senator Heiersdorf, who left, and her seat flipped to the Democrats. And then there was the first Senate district, Senator Lassay. He resigned from the Senate. He stepped down, and his seat is vacant. So now you only have 18 members, and you have to have 17. Now, to get 17 out of 20 was pretty doable on an issue like this. But now with trying to get 17 out of 18, you know, it's just very... And we had Heiersdorf, and so we just needed one more. Darlene was kind of the tipping point, and I kind of thought we might get her, but when you had the Senate seat flipped to the Democrats, the Heiersdorf seat. Now, if you just voted straight up in the Senate, yeah, you'd pass it. Both parties would support it. There's no question. But that's, and it's a typical rule that takes place in the legislative bodies. The majority party says, if you want to pass a bill, you need to have your majority made up of members of our caucus. That's typical. Both parties do that when they have the control. It's not unusual. Not that it's a good practice. I won't defend the practice.
No, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend the practice. Yeah. But I'm not majority leader, so, you know. And what I would encourage you guys all to do is to talk to your legislators on both sides of the aisle and say, hey, bring this up for a vote, regardless of who's in control or whatever legislative caucus rules you have, because if it gets a vote, if legislators got a vote on it, it's going to pass.
Every single legislator at the chamber breakfast that seven of the board members attended said they were all for the dark stores legislation.
Oh, yeah.
Democrat and Republican.
Everyone, sure. Yeah, you talked to your legislators, Van Weingard, Bob Wirch. Those are the two senators. And these you guys have Steve Noss, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe he supports it. I think he might. And Samantha Kirkman, Peter Barca, Corey Mason's gone.
Yeah, but Bob could only get 31 signatures for this to initiate a special session. So he couldn't get any more than that.
Okay. So, no, I saw he was in the paper talking about it. So it's a big issue.
Yeah.
And certainly, I think one of the benefits, I'll say this, with his dark stores, although not successful, it doesn't appear will be successful this session, it's gotten so much attention It's the term salience. Salience means people are aware of it. It's attention. So even though we're not successful, there is more momentum behind it than there was before because we've been able to make it an issue. There's a public outcry. And so then when the next session starts, as people go to campaign for re-election, you'll have more campaign forums where you'll have moderators. They'll say, hey, where are you at in the dark stores legislation? And that helps. That helps the cause. And that puts pressure on people, puts them on the record, things like that. So we were not done fighting the battle.
I was going to say, nomination is what, go out the first part of April? So you're going to check you don't see that thing.
For, yeah.
Assembly and Senate.
Boy, good. I'm not running, so I don't know.
I think it's mid-April with a June 1st due date.
Okay.
So, you know what? They moved the primary. It used to be the primary for the partisan primaries were in September, and they moved it back. So, because I remember you used to have to do it in the summertime, but yeah, they made it earlier. So. Okay, well, we got more time. Anything else?
anything on the workman's comp reform, just in general, where...
So, do I have something in here?
You do, but I was reading it. It's talking about PTSD. I'm talking about, in general, workers' comp reform. Have you heard anything about that? Because I know they brought that up where...
So I have
basically
had
workers' comp claims are overpaying versus what private insurance is paying, and it's causing our workers' comp numbers
sure.
just to skyrocket, which affects, obviously, well, every business out there.
So, yeah, absolutely. That is one issue of consensus I think we'd have with the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. It's a complex issue. And even some of the unions out there are interested in seeing some reform, too. But I think nothing's going to happen this session, especially at this late date. I don't foresee anything coming. I know we have an interest in it, too, and there's a lot of groups that do. And rising costs are always a problem. On the PTSD issue that you brought up, so... There was a bill. The bill's pretty much dead at this point. I think it was Andre Jacques was the bill author on related to PTSD. And essentially, this affects in your counties. I do want to mention it, the law enforcement. So if someone has a diagnosis under this bill for PTSD, the assumption would be that you got PTSD due to your employment. And so we have issues with that. Then the burden's on us to either concur or agree to that or to dispute that. And so we don't like the general assumption beginning at that point that automatically it's because that they were in law enforcement or they were a county employee. But that bill is dead, so which is positive.
That is because, I mean, a lot of law enforcement are former military, which did you get it being in the military or being on the force?
And I think it defies common sense a bit, too, because... I mean, you could have gotten PTSD from any number. And this just assumes right away it came from your work as a county employee, as a member of law enforcement. So we were opposed to that, got concerns. It was certainly being pushed by Wisconsin Professional Police Association and others that wanted the bill. But anyway, we think we have that bottled up. So.
Animal-drawn transport legislation.
So, yeah.
Does that affect really, your district?
But really?
Big time.
Anything with horseshoes are going to injure the highway. I would love to see that.
Well, that's...
That's one bad roadway.
I don't know if you guys... tell me if you do or not.
Can't believe they spent time
do
on
we
it.
Have an honest
I agree with the stroll.
Well, I tell you, so there. I give you the background because I do transportation, pretty involved in this bill. It's Representative Kathy Bernier. She's got a district that includes the western part of Clark County and the eastern part of Eau Claire, and a little bit of Osseo, Wisconsin. If you drive up on 94th towards the Twin Cities, towards Eau Claire, you go through her district. There's a major Amish population, and she. I give her credit. She's got a great relationship with the Amish community. And she's calling. There's a couple of issues her and I have worked on recently. This is one of them. But in those counties, in Eau Claire and on your county trunk highway system and in Clark, there is injury to the road based on spikes, based on the very narrow tires, especially when you use blacktop and it goes over the blacktop. You have a 95 degree day, some construction's been done. Blacktop, Amish use the road, they don't pay the gas tax. So, this is one of the fixes. Also, the strobe light in terms of highway safety, the strobe light bill, we think that makes sense. We think it's reasonable. There was another issue, since we're talking religious exemptions. The Amish, obviously, you can get an exemption from the Department of DSPS, Department of Safety and Professional Services, for indoor plumbing. And worked with Representative Bernier, we agreed to that. That's understandable. You can get a religious exemption for any indoor plumbing. The issue was, and this is brought to my attention by some of the code administrators, for a POTS, private on-site wastewater treatment system, DSPS and their legal counsel, for whatever reason, looked at the POTS, and we had determined that you could get a religious exemption, and the language that was used said inside in a one or two family dwelling, in the dwelling, in. But they were giving religious exemptions out for POTS, for the septic tanks. And then you just, in some cases, some of these families had a hose running out to the waterway or, you know, or into a pond or, you know, it was not a good situation. And certainly a potential, you know, public health concern for some of the counties out there. So anyway, you'll see there's a slide on this, but we had simply inside now it says, it's gonna say the one or two family dwelling. That's what we had to change to the statutes. And with that language, the DSPS legal counsel will be able to, he says, will no longer view the POTS as being inside. Because the whole house was attached, he viewed it as part of the indoor plumbing setup of a one or two family dwelling. I said, well, it's not in the dwelling, it's out in the yard. But him and I had this debate, and we had our legal counsel, and I had my legal counsel draft him a memo that says your legal interpretation is wrong. And he said, no, it's not. It's in because it's part of the... Anyway, I just said, you know what? It's fine. I went to Kathy Bernier. She said, that's not my intent. I understand. That's what they're doing. So we drafted a bill to change it. Bill got passed. It's done. Actually, we actually had an amendment to a bill to change it. And the bill was a vehicle to get it done. So we have Amish issues. That's my... They're wonderful. And Kathy, I give her credit. She, Representative Bernier, she does a great job dealing with all of her constituents.
Anything else before we go to the regular meeting?
I won't have an opportunity to talk with you as long as I did tonight. Well, I know, what issues do you think I should discuss with the full board? Juvenile corrections? Dark stores? Transportation?
Can you talk about the foster care real quick?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, you know, I got to tell you, so I'm just going to... Okay. I'm going to tell you, this is not my area of expertise, and so she briefed me on it. Essentially, there was a series of bills on foster care to try to provide more funding, try to shore us up in terms of any services we provide. These are some of the details, but can I provide you some supplemental information, maybe email you, just because I just don't have the background on this particular topic. I can get back to you on what's going on with foster care, because Sarah, she handles it. And I just, you know, some of these
so
issues.
So was the issue that it's not being managed effectively at the county level? It's too much state intervention. Did she give you a gist of why there felt there had to be legislative action?
Well,
I think input from the families of just changes that need to be made to help the kids out.
So this is one issue we sort of glossed over it when I talked to her, because she was more, she said, just focus on the juvenile correction stuff, and here's the broad overview. I said, okay. But so what I'll do, though, since you're interested, is I can provide you with some supplemental information. And again, I gotta be honest, it's just not an issue I've ever handled and dealt with. So.
We have a lot of more kids in foster care, if you saw the article, because of the opioid epidemic.
Oh,
that, you know,
no doubt. And on top of it is, if it's you know, a bad situation for the kids, they end up in the criminal justice system. So it's an important one when there's no alternative. And in this case, you know, it can be a very positive or a very negative, but we've got to make sure that we're providing proper resources.
But what I can do is, if you have a card, I can follow up with you, and I can have Sarah give you a call and let you know. She has all the background
you
and details.
Email it
just
to
send it to the committee.
Yeah, and then the whole committee
okay.
can get it.
Sure. Please. I'll just have her provide you some details on that particular issue. She can give you the whys and what the impetus was and all that.
be great.
All right, anything else come before the committee? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you guys. Hope it was informative.